The Deepwater Horizon explosion occurred April 20th. As soon as it started making the slick on the surface, the rough seas and high winds turned the crude oil into an aerosol that every time the wind blew from the south, it blew it inshore, and it made people very sick. Nausea, headaches, respiratory problems. Most of these people along the shoreline didn't realize that that's why they felt really bad. So I was out doing workshops educating them about what was going on, what was causing the problems, and particularly vulnerable populations like newborn, elderly, people on chemo, had to consider whether they wanted to get out of the area and not be exposed, to reduce the exposure. So that was the immediate action. My name is Wilma Subra. I'm president of Subra Company in New Iberia, Louisiana. Subra Company provides technical assistance to community groups dealing with environmental issues. In July 2010, after the well was capped and the message started going out that most of the oil was gone, we started going out to document where the oil was, how it was going to behave in the environment over the long term. So we went out and took samples of water, of sediment soil in the wetland areas, and seafood. We took oysters, crabs, fin fish, and shrimp. And we had them analyzed for the polynuclear aromatic hydrocarbons, which were the most prevalent substance in the BP crude. We found concentrations that actually matched the fingerprint of the BP crude. These were in samples that were not visibly oiled. When you collected it, if you would have been out fishing, you would have taken it home and cooked it for your family. The Food and Drug Administration established specific concentrations or chemicals of concern and levels of concern for specific polynuclear aromatic hydrocarbons. They based it on a consumption seafood rate of the United States. Shrimp was one meal a week of four jumbo shrimp. Does not have anything to do with the consumption rate along the coast of the Gulf of Mexico. And so it was totally underestimating the risk. If you take the results, let's say the seafood that we've collected and analyzed, and you compare it to what the Food and Drug Administration and NOAA, the data matches. The data matches. It's the difference in interpretation. Jane Levchenko was head of NOAA, had a press conference in Kenner, and the seafood industry was behind her. She kept making the statement over and over again, the seafood is not contaminated. The seafood is not contaminated. So I sent her a message that based on just your data, 40% of the shrimp and 30-some percent of the oysters are contaminated with PAHs, but not over the levels that you've established. So your message should be, seafood is contaminated with PAHs, but not above the acceptable level established by Food and Drug. A number of days later, she changed her message to that. You know, if you look at four jumbo shrimp a meal a week, that's not what people on the Gulf Coast eat, and that's not what the subsistence fishers that are also commercial fishers eat. I mean, they eat it when they're out on the boats, because that's the food source they're capturing. They bring it home and feed it to their families, and they eat it every day and sometimes two or three meals a day of it. So it's totally different than someone in New York that goes to a restaurant and might have a shrimp cocktail. So here now we have levels in the seafood of polynuclear aromatic hydrocarbons, known and suspected cancer-causing agents, long-lived in bioaccumulation and residual in the seafood. And people need to be aware of that when they consume the seafood. And they need to make personal decisions about, do I consume the seafood or not, and how much seafood do I consume? And they deserve to have the knowledge and the data to make their personal decisions. I think the part that gets to me the most is the frustration over not being able to provide medical care to the people who are so very sick, and seeing them get sick and continuing to be sick over the long haul. These people deserve to have medical care that will either improve their medical condition or deal legitimately with it. The second level is the contamination that's still out there. Oil is continuing to come on shore in the form of tar balls, mats, and strings all along the coast. When you listen to the federal message, it's that It's all over. It's no longer out there. If you go to Grand Isle, you see areas where the responders have put new sand over oil spill. In mid-April, when I was down in Grand Isle, there was tar balls still washing in. There was some of the burn residual, and there was birds, feet up in the air, oiled and just barely breathing or dead. How can you tell people it's over? The issue is it's still a very large problem. There's that subsurface of oil on the bottom and near the bottom. And if we have a hurricane like Katrina or Rita that brings in a tidal surge, it's going to bring that oil onshore. And if you don't admit it's offshore, you're not going to be prepared for when it comes onshore.